Go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission, Wednesday, September 6, 2023, 6 p.m. The first item is call to order, which we just did, but we have two people absent today. Connie did notify us that she would not be available, and also Byron has some COVID going around the family, so he chose it'd be better not to show today. So do I have a motion to excuse?
Motion to excuse both of them.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Aye. Next, I'd like to look at the agenda that we have in front of us. If anyone has any comments on it, otherwise we'll adopt this agenda.
Make a motion, we adopt the agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Aye. Okay, now the minutes. August 2nd meeting minutes were distributed, both electronically, and you have a copy in your package. There are a few edits that Beth has already made to these minutes, one being that Craig and Tony were present at this meeting. Other than that, do we have any comments on these minutes?
Motion to adopt.
Second.
All in favor of adopting his minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are adopted. Public comment. Anyone in the room have any comments at this time? Beth, we don't have anyone on the phone, right?
There is no phone tonight.
Okay, no phone.
Are we out of using phones or?
It's only if someone requests a link.
Okay, that takes us to old business. The first item, 5.1, on continued discussion of the SIC codes is my item. So I just want to have a little discussion on that. At the last town council meeting, the uses was our text amendment for our uses in different areas was approved. So I took that wording and I've incorporated into the SIC changes, because there were SIC changes that had to happen on top of the permitted uses. So on the table in front of you, I was included a copy just for your perusal over the next month, because it's actually not being presented today, but you do have a copy for review so that some of these smaller comments can be worked out before the next meeting. So you'll see the one titled 150210 definitions. That is actually my SIC change. And we also have our attorney Jim's proposed changes to the definitions and some of the statements that we've already reviewed. So these both will be put together. Jim, you're going to put these together and present them next month? Is that the plan?
I will. I have some things to discuss about it tonight.
Okay. That's good.
So when you're done with your comments, I'll jump in.
Okay, well, that's basically it. I'm done with the SIC text amendment, my work. It's ready to come and be presented to this board and then go to town council. Other than the one question I have on that item 15-20-040, which is separate. So let's do your questions first.
You can do that one as well.
Yeah, we'll do that at the end.
I appreciate the fact that we're discussing tonight and that I can put together a document for next month, because these came in very recently. I've given it a very quick initial review, and I have just a couple of questions. If you turn, first of all, you should have two documents. You should have Joe's sick changes documents, which is page 1 of 25, that's on the bottom of the page of the document. You should also have the sick code-related text amendments I drafted a couple of months ago. That's a two-page document. The first question I've got, if you turn to, let me find it first. If you turn to page 2 of Joe's text amendment, and you turn to page 2 of my text amendment, the 1508050, which Bosch, okay, I see the answer to the question. you're not striking everything in 150805, or you're simply referring to what I did before?
Correct. Just insert yours there.
I didn't see that before. The only other question I had at this stage was, in some, can you explain to me what you've done? Let me get to it. Go to page 8 of 25 of Joe's document, appendix A, 1544010. Joe, can you explain your approach here and what it is that you're doing or what it is that you did?
Sure, sure. What I did is I did a cross-check three ways. Basically, from the wording in section 15 of the code to appendix A wording to appendix B tabular form of the SIC codes that we use. So anywhere in section 15 of our code where it referenced an SIC code, I made sure it was in both of the appendixes. Then anything that was in the appendixes, if it applied into our section 15, I inserted it back in. So now everything agrees, the two appendixes and our words. So if you see here on page 8, the first item that I crossed out, cookies and crackers, that did not appear anywhere in our ordinance. So I didn't add it. I didn't add a definition for cookies and crackers. We don't need that. So I just eliminated this SIC code, because it doesn't belong. Same thing with the second, apparel belts. We don't have any belt stores. So that's the approach that I took. Then next month I was planning on going into more detail, because a lot of the red lines that you see are really rewording, where something may have said, Let me find some.
You're talking about Appendix A still?
I'm in the appendix, yeah. Appendix A and Appendix B. It may have said retail, comma, florists versus florists, comma, retail. So I just made everything agree.
That's your syntactical approach.
That's the syntactical approach to A equals B equals C.
All right, let me ask some specific questions. On page 10, 7011 strikeout, 7011 red. Two questions. What's the difference between the two? And is 70? I would assume, without going back and looking at it, that 7011 non-strikeout matches the definition that we gave for tourist lodgings. And my final question, which relates to several things in Appendix A. Do we need all these bullets, or does the paragraph itself provide the information that's needed?
Well, that's where, in this case, and this is a good example, if you go to the actual SIC code, it has all those bullets. I didn't want to take the liberty of modifying the SIC code and then inserting it, because then you're really not inserting the SIC code. It's a modification. So I wanted to reference the SIC code as it read.
Well, then what's...
Unfortunately, the
good question is, what's the 7011 modification that follows on this page? In other words, you struck out 7011, and then we've got a new 7011. Is that a modified?
Yes, because actually it was easier to do it that way than to try to do it word by word and move things around and change one word here, one word there, add bullets, remove bullets. It just would have been more of a mess. So you really just have to compare the one to the other to see the changes.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to do that. I'm just curious what the difference was. So my final question at this stage is, when I get into, I think we need to look at 7011 and 7021. All right, what's the parenthetical tourist lodging there for? In other words, when I go to the code and I look up tourist lodgings, I guess the definition, I'm going to see new SIC numbers 7011 and 7021?
Correct. And in our definitions, hotels and motels we categorize under 7011 and 7021.
And I don't recall, didn't have a chance to look, our definition for tourist lodgings includes hotels,
yes.
Hotels and rooming and
board. Yes, our new tourist lodging definition has all of this in it. It's got the bed and breakfast, the boarding, the hotels, the motels.
When I get to page 13, all those bullets are there because you didn't want to modify the SIC code?
That's correct.
And
actually, looking through them, I don't see any reason why if we as a town would allow four or five of those different practices, why we wouldn't allow all of them. I mean, it's just a different type of health practice that could fall into that. So if you're going to list any, list them all.
And I didn't go back and look at the SIC code. If I go to the SIC code itself and I look at 8049, I'm going to see what I'm looking at right now.
Word for word, cut and paste.
Bullet for bullet.
Yes, sir.
Likewise, on page 14 and 15, schools and educational services.
Correct.
Okay, that explains the questions that I had. Following your all's discussion tonight, I'll produce the document for the report and review and a consistency statement for next month.
Okay.
But before we leave all these SIC codes, did the commissioners have any comments, questions, or notes about the same?
The only comment I have is that I'm all for using SIC codes. When we did this originally, the SIC codes were still being used by the U.S. government. They have now been superseded by the NAICSs, and so the government doesn't update the SIC codes, even though people do use them, so it's perfectly fine to use them. But everybody should realize that currently the government, federal government, uses the NAICSs, which can be cross-referenced to the SIC codes. But we can still use the SIC codes because they are still available and so forth.
And I think the fact that we're going to amend the ordinance to provide that SIC codes are for illustrative purposes only.
Right. Sometime in the next decade, we may want to update it to NAICSs.
Well, let Joe do that.
So, because there's someone else might want to do that.
That's right. That's why I said the decade.
It might take that long. Also on your desk, in front of you, is you should see a copy of provision KBC 1520040, modification to required lot area. Tell me when you all have that in front of you.
It's the single page block.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
This is it. Okay.
Joe raised the question. First of all, the provision in front of you relates only to, what is it,
RA3.
And he questioned whether or not that should be, this provision comes out of the RA3 district regulations. And he questioned whether it should be there or pulled out and applicable to all districts. I probably would turn to John Batson for an answer to that question, but he had noted that for RA1, 15-10-040, we also have this modification provision. So it shows up twice in the district regulations, one for RA1 and one for RA3. I don't have anything else to add as to the issue Joe has pointed out. There may be a good reason that we've only got two of them and only for those particular districts. and therefore not district-wide? I don't know.
Just very quickly, this allows then heirs to have this particular option. Is that general to Curie Beach, or are we just allowing it in these two districts? And I don't quite understand legators. You know, I understand heirs, but I don't understand the word legators here.
Where? Point me to where you're reading.
Maybe I'm reading the wrong thing.
It just has different numbers.
No, it's up here.
Modification of the required lot area and required yard setbacks.
It's in the second line under A, at least in the copy that I have.
Here's it.
I don't particularly have a problem with heirs at all. I'm just trying to respond to Joe's articulated issue of whether two of these four specific districts is logical, or whether it needs to be lifted out of the district and applied.
Well, that's the issue I'm raising too, because, you know, do we have in other districts the opportunity of heirs of law and legators to have something like this? I mean, or are we allowing something kind of unique in these two districts?
I don't know the answer to that. The other instance of this particular provision is RA1, and it's worth an attention. But it's only in RA1 and RA3 that these identical provisions show up. John, can you shed any light on it?
Because this is a non-conforming issue, basically, isn't it?
It is. We've discussed this before, and I can't remember why. It's been a while. I'd like a chance to research it, just to tell you that. I don't think there's really a problem taking both of these sections out in RA1 and RA3, because non-conforming use already covers any other property in town that someone wants to build on. Even if it does not meet the minimum lot requirements, regardless of whether or not they're in error, as it should be. So I'm not real sure why that's there. I remember discussing it at one point, and we decided to leave it. That's all I remember.
Right. And I mean, from a legal point of view, what is a legator?
I don't know.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
It had something to do with wills. I remember that much, but it's not a North Carolina term.
I would certainly suggest that John investigate this, because it's a non-conforming issue. I'm not sure why we would have a special non-conforming exception.
All I'm going to try to do is figure out what it became codified, see what the commentary was on.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. Anything else for me on any of these issues?
Nope.
So to summarize, we'll hear back on that RA3 and RA1 provision, and I'll prepare the SIC code documents for you all next month.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's the SIC summary.
Do we need a motion at all for this? Need a motion next month when you bring...
Right, next month.
Yeah. Next month, okay.
This was just my discussion on SIC. It'll come back for okay. All right, item 5.2 is discussion on a proposed text amendment 1536-260. This is on the battery text. John, you want to take the lead on this?
Based on the last month's discussion, I went back and listened to the minutes again. This all transpired because of solar energy batteries. You guys were concerned about, you know, batteries used for solar energy, period. It may not be related to solar energy. And so, based on listening to your minutes from last month, again, it sounded like you guys were more concerned about where to stick a new section of ordinance for this potential issue than you were about the wording. And so, I picked a new spot for a new section of the ordinance and plugged in the same language almost that we used for solar energy. And I guess it's ready for you guys to discuss.
Page 7. It's found on page 7 in the package.
one note, if we're going to move forward on it, it's a Chapter 15 ordinance, so we would have, just like eventually we'll get to the SIC code, you'll have a legislative hearing for this as well as consistency statement. So tonight's discussion, depending on the discussion tonight, we can produce that for next month in addition to the SIC code.
And I think I mentioned last time when we wrote this original thing for solar energy, we had to be very careful and make sure our wording worked within the state legislative rules in this. And I did check again, and this would be fine. You know, there's nothing in that.
Well, I have a few comments there that I'm not exactly sure that I can agree with this, simply because that for solar batteries that are externally mounted, what makes them, is it more the size? I mean, I'm trying to understand why we wouldn't want them on the house. I mean, if you look at things that do protrude into the setbacks, like hurricane shutters, it's about the size of a Tesla battery. That you open them up with the Bahama shutters, they protrude 16, 18, 24 inches into a setback. They're allowed. Your fireplace, you know, range hoods, transfer switch, electrical panels, all protrude into the setback more. So I'm trying to really understand, is it more the height, and it varies. The National Electrical Code requires you to follow the manufacturer's instructions when you install certain things like this. And like with Tesla or LG, requires you to be 24 to 29 inches off of the ground on the external mounted batteries, which puts them probably at or a little above the 6 feet. So I think we want to promote green energy, but I don't want to like do something that creates an issue for us down the road, and it's in conflict with a lot of different other entities, you know, that are promoting green energy. I don't think we can do anything about the technology. Batteries will evolve and change. They're going there now, but if you look at the most popular, LG and Tesla are about the same size, and they have different requirements on exterior mounted batteries. The Tesla is like almost 6 inches thick, and it's about 48 inches tall and about 30 inches wide. If somebody's going to put multiple ones on their side of their house, like you sometimes, I noted the one on Ocean Boulevard, is it something we really, is it going to create more problems down the road? The National Electrical Code says you can, but you follow the manufacturer's requirements. Tesla requires, and LG requires, a certain amount of inches off of the ground to be wall-mounted, which may put us over the 6 foot requirement.
I mean, if that's true, I mean, I don't have a problem with making 7 feet or 6.5 feet or something like that. You know,
does it?
I don't recall how we came up with the 6 feet. Is that just a number that we chose last month when we discussed it?
Well, I think we use that in other determinations, you know, like for other things.
Like for things, right, no higher than 6 feet.
I remember something about the propane tanks or right. Something.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the problems is the industry's so new that anything that we write day after tomorrow, we may have to modify.
You're exactly right. And, you know, is it going to get bigger, smaller? I couldn't honestly tell you, but it's going to change. Tesla seems to they're kind of like an industry leader along with LG and a few others, but is it, do we want to put something in writing, a text amendment, that absolutely will not allow somebody to do something? We're going to be right back here again in you know, having more conversations.
And yet, not putting something in writing leaves us open to people doing.
That's exactly where your discussion was last month.
Right. What is the right thing to do if they follow the manufacturers and the National Electrical Code requirements for installation? Then whatever brand they use, it may put it above 6 feet or maybe even 7 feet.
I'm looking at the Tesla website for it right now, and they've got two pictures of it, one on the ground.
That's one option.
And then one above. So, you know,
it depends on that, and it depends on your location. NEC requires you to follow certain wet location installations, which a manufacturer's Tesla would require you to be 24 to 29 inches above. You know, we couldn't mount that in some of our locations here simply because it's going to get flooded. I don't think the electrical inspector wouldn't pass it. So with that said, do we put some number that's acceptable? Maybe it's not 6 feet, but I'm just pointing out some things that I see that, and it's more for discussion, you know, and what is the right thing to put?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Tony, on this. I think when we came up with the 6 feet, we talked about the propane tanks or the generators. That was actually in the setback. That's where we allowed people to put things in the setback. Here we are saying may not project into the setback. So the height requirement should not be an issue. I mean, if you're not in your setback, it's like putting an air conditioner in a window. As long as it's not out into the setback, it could be in your top story, which is, you know, 25 feet high.
Well,
so
here I don't think we're going to have a ground-mounted situation for a battery. We're going to have to be above the ground simply for
water
water purposes. So when I looked through the manufacturer's recommendations on exterior-mounted batteries, it was a 24 to 29, and I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but that was a requirement above the ground level. That's the bottom of the battery. Okay, the National Electrical Code basically refers back to the manufacturer's installation requirements. That's often a common practice they use for equipment and specific devices that you would mount. They don't really put certain codes around every little thing that's made. So I think that having them on the wall is for me not a big deal, as long as they follow the manufacturer's and NEC requirements for the installation.
Well, I think that's it. That part is a given,
mm-hmm.
right? Separate of what we're writing here, that has to be followed by the installer.
Correct.
But hopefully gets the proper permit and follows everything they have to do.
But we can't determine what the height of
right.
that, you know,
correct.
Tesla made, and we're going to make it tall and skinny instead of shorter and fat. So we can't control that, but I do think that if we have here that they are acceptable, but they have to follow the installation recommendations or requirements by the manufacturer and National Electrical Code, I think that's a doable situation for me.
So then
John, have you ever had a problem where there was something that you didn't like for whatever reason, and yet there was nothing specific that you could point to in writing that was there to back you up?
Every day.
So if we write it generically, you're going to be the final determiner, or the county electrical inspector or whoever, you're going to be the final determiner, and you're going to say either yes or no, and it's going to end up either here and or court.
That's a pretty fair statement, yes sir.
But if the what's going to happen when the electrical inspector comes out, if they follow the manufacturer's installation requirements, that's pretty much it.
But if he can give us a valid reason why whatever the installation is, he doesn't feel is safe, or whatever reason he gives, then it's going to be up to us to either change language or tell him, you lost this one.
I'm trying to figure out what that would be, you know, because the National Electrical Code actually is the one that would provide that guidance of to keep us safe in how to mount these. I mean, they're rated for outside. If you follow those requirements and when you use the manufacturer's installation specifications and what we need to do there and the height off of the ground, I don't know what more we could do or John could do or even the electrical inspector could do. What we can't control, you know, is the height and the size.
Yeah.
Well, I think the whole reason this came up was because I aesthetically didn't want to look at batteries on the sides of people's houses. And so I hear what you're saying. I agree with you. So how about I just rewrite this section to say that batteries and accessories used for storing energy may be mounted on the sides and rear, blah, 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 provided that the batteries are not mounted any higher than required by the manufacturer's suggested installation procedures from the ground and may not project them into any required setback.
I could live with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that is acceptable. And I just didn't want to get into a situation where we were viewed as discouraging, you know, any type of solar or green energy.
Yeah, according to the Tesla manual, the maximum height above the ground is 1.5 meters. So they don't want to have higher than 1.5 meters.
It's like 4 feet.
Yeah, so that's a maximum that they want. So, and I think the height of these things, I had to go back to, was about another 4 feet or something like that.
Roughly, yeah.
So that would take it up 8 feet if they take it to the max. So, you know, I think when you write that, it should be shouldn't be any higher than the minimum manufacturer's recommendation. So we're not up at 8 feet.
Yeah, the manufacturer's recommendations and guidance will change, and that will change along with the installation requirements.
Yep.
So we don't have to be in the business of leasing it.
I don't want the house usually.
If you've got a house on pilings and it's not enclosed underneath, where are you going to put them, on the piling or on the?
I mean, you could. I mean, they still got to follow that. They'd have to put something there to mount it to, because it's going to be probably close proximity to the electrical utilities, just from a cost perspective. It has nothing to do with if you have batteries that are made to go inside. If you could do the same installation inside in a room or something like that, it's nothing to do with that. But this is only the ones that are mounted externally, that are designed to be external to the house or the building.
I got a question. I like John's wording, but how do we know that the installation will conform to those requirements? Is this something that the county would inspect?
I have provided all this information for every single solar installation. I'm sure I would for any battery installations, but I haven't had one of those yet. So.
Okay. That's good enough for me. I just wanted to check.
Okay, so John, we want you to, you're going to write this up again and bring it back next month?
It's already written.
So
I'm sending it to the town attorney right now, and I guess it's probably going to be on.
Can you send it to Beth as well? Can you put it up on the screen?
Right.
Well, Jim, can we accept this as modified today and then move forward?
We're not reviewing and reporting today. We're just discussing.
Okay.
But if you can take a, if we can see what John is sending and finish the discussion, then we can move forward with the review and reporting that comes.
Okay. So then that's how we'll move forward.
Let's give a second to see if we can email the
PC. Yeah, can we just pull it up real quick? Yeah. Yeah, by the way, this, while this is coming up, I spent the last 2 weeks in California traveling up and down the beach communities, talking to planning commissioners and planning developers there. And I mean, there's some beautiful areas, and I think we're doing a great job. That's one issue. But I have to admit that every third car is now an electric car, and these battery systems are everywhere. So we will get them. So I think it's appropriate to look at it. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Should the manufacturer's minimum or minimum amount of manufacturers?
The minimum?
Yeah, that's right. Are not mounted any higher than the manufacturer's minimum installation.
Yes, I agree. Does that look wrong?
That sounds like a cheap manufacturer the way you had it.
All right, lots of quick
fix. The minimum manufacturer.
All right, everybody's good with that wording
now?
Yeah,
yeah. No, I think that's fine. I think that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought it up. So.
And you're good with it, Tony, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this makes sense. And
I'll just change this to say any higher than the manufacturer's installation direction for minimum distance from the ground.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good.
Okay, good. Let's move on. The next item, 5.3, is a continued discussion on the land use plan initiative and how our commission could get involved with this. And this was Chairman Ashbridge's item. I spoke to him about it. And he was just asking, John, if you got a chance to look through it, are there any areas that you would like us to focus on? Because you have a lot of actions or recommended actions in that plan. If there was anything you wanted us to help you with or look at.
Not that I could really see,
no. Okay. Well, if in the future something should come up, please reach out to us and get us involved however you can. Okay, so Beth, this could come off the agenda for next month.
Okay, I will take it off.
All right. That's it for old business. Now we'll move on to new business. And the first item is the text amendment application to KBC 1536010 from property owner Steve Stefanovich. Are you going to discuss it, Steve, or is John? How are we doing this?
I'll be happy to.
Please step up to the mic.
I'm here to ask for an amendment to ordinance 1536010. Never thought I'd be having this conversation. When we built our house 20-some years ago, we did think, well, we might put an elevator at some point, but really didn't think that. Well, we never thought we'd get that old. And then we never thought we'd have health problems and all that good stuff. And so we did line it up where the house is lined up where we can put it on. And we also knew that we had plenty of space between our home and the HOA property to the west side of our home. So as I said,
it's on the screen behind you, just letting you know too.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So, and I'll get to this in just a moment. So, having never thought we'd have this conversation, I called our architect. He came, looked at everything over. I said, well, here's our property right here. It goes right down by our fence, right down here, which was about 10 or 11 feet from our house. So it was no issue. As soon as we're exploring the possibilities of this, he says, well, Steve, I'd really like for you to do a survey. I said, well, is it really necessary? I mean, we've been here 20-some years. The homeowners know where their property is. We know where our property is. What's the sense of us going to that expense? John said, no, John Sawyer says, I just feel more comfortable if you go ahead and do a survey. I said, okay. So we called the surveyor. And I'm reading a few notes, as I told Beth. She knows I'll get off base a bit. So I'm trying to keep on task for you all tonight. But so as we had, so I had the survey. He came and he said, Steve, you don't have as much space as you think. What happened was is the homeowners actually put their fence, it should be right here instead of right here. So that cut into our, so I've been maintaining this property for the homeowners for the last 20 some years. Okay, now we move forward. So I'm like, okay, now what do we do? So I go to the HOA, explain to them, here's the situation. They said, well, look, we don't have a problem with you building an elevator. That's no problem at all. We don't mind you going in the setback. We don't mind you doing whatever. I said, well, that's great, but that's not a HOA up a decision. Obviously, that's a town decision when we start talking about setbacks. So then I came to John and Beth, who has been extremely helpful walking me through this process and has been just more than kind and Beth's tired of talking to me because I just want to make sure I've got all the information that you're looking for. So after talking with them, I thought, well, okay, so how does this affect Curie Beach? Because this can't be a Steve and Julie thing. So how do... are we the only ones that this affects in our community? So I got in the car and I started driving around our town and found 40-some opportunities, just like we have, that I think, now keep in mind there may be an elevator in that house that I don't know, okay? But for instance,
which one?
Let's see.
Which way?
This is at Sea Watch, and there's a home right here, as you all know, and then there's a, so.
There one you wanted? I
don't know which one it is. I think that all of these, well, let's go to this one here, Beth, please. So, if you look at our public entrances to our beaches, we have homes on both sides in most cases. Now, I don't know that this home has an elevator, so it may not count as one of those 40 plus properties that I'm using as an example. But they certainly, if they came out, the amendment is stating that we would, I'm asking for 2 feet into the right of way, if it isn't a public property, or into HOA property that's not going to be developed.
Right away or setback?
Setback. Did I say right away? I don't even know where that came from. I know what right away means.
I'll tell you later.
Okay. don't get me confused now. I'm on a roll. So this is one example. Beth, would you mind just kind of maybe scrolling to a couple others?
Yeah.
There's, this is another example, and here's another one, right here, at Curie Estates. This one, this is at Atlantic, and I didn't label these because I was told you all probably knew exactly what these places were anyway, but anyway, that's Atlantic. Then, there's a couple, and you all, I'm assuming you've seen these pictures, so I don't need to go through every picture with you. And you all can read as well, or better than I can. But there are, if you go down Fort Fisher, Beth, there's samples at Fort Fisher, right here.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. The same book.
Oh,
same
you
situation.
Better?
Yeah, same situation. So if this home here is decided to put a, either one put a, an elevator in it, they probably have to go into their setback area. But it's never going to affect a single soul because that's not going to change. That's not going anywhere. Nor is the Fort Fisher, okay, probably in our lifetimes. That's another beach entrance, two residents. This is a home with going back into the, what's that property called?
Matsu
property. Probably won't be developed. So that was another example. Same thing with this home here. Now, I'm not here to say that these people are all looking to put an elevator in. But I'm looking to say that there are 40-plus examples that I counted, and I don't know how many more there are, that would fit within the guidelines of what the text amendment which has been drafted. I hope you received a letter from the president of our HOA. Okay. That is all in the, they certainly don't have a problem with what's being proposed. This, obviously, you can see, there, as I said, I don't need to go through all the pictures, but it could be because you've already seen them. But I think that the main thing, the main purpose of which I'm trying to get across is that Julie and I are one of many in our town that could benefit from this text amendment change.
Well, so I appreciate the work you did going out looking through the town, because sometimes we get things like this and somebody has an individual need and it's like, this is what I want, this is how I want to do it. But you took it further and look outside of your box, which is appreciated.
Well, it can't be just for us, right. And I realize that. So, as I said, Beth and John helped me draft this text amendment. So, it's funny, they had in their file for our property that, I don't know if you had a copy of this, but it shows 9 feet there, which is not 9 feet, and that was in the town files. But at any rate, we'd like to move forward with this project, and I think there will be others that potentially in the future would like to do the very same thing. And so I'm asking you to amend this ordinance.
So basically the elevator is going to go from like the driveway area up to the, you just have a second floor?
If you want to...
back to the years?
Yeah, this is our home right here.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is we're going out 4 feet. It takes 4 feet to go out for the elevator.
Correct.
Well, this tree is 6.5 feet from this wall. Okay? So even if it comes out to here, and it's not, but if you came out here, you can see that it doesn't affect anything. It does, after talking to our board at the HOA, they were like, they didn't know this wasn't our property, or this part wasn't our property. So, but I think the key to this is that it's not going to infringe on anybody's line of view, side of view. It won't affect anything in terms of property lines, obviously. And so it goes out to about this tree right here. What our proposal is, if that's what you're asking, is we would extend this from this piling here out here and run a hallway down the side of the house and then go straight up with the elevator shaft, all of which would not be more than 4 feet from the present wall.
Okay, and that elevator shaft will go up two floors?
This is a three-floor.
Three-story, okay.
Yes, sir.
And will it be enclosed?
Absolutely. It'll be a column.
There's
Would you like to see a picture of the architectural? I mean, I have it all drawn out.
Sure.
I mean, so I mean, it's all.
It just helps me understand.
Yeah. And these are preliminary drawings.
Okay.
But that's the 4 foot hallway, if you will. Pulling out, that's the 4 foot hallway.
Right.
And then this is the.
So it's all enclosed in. Okay.
Oh, you could never know the difference once it's finished.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I understand.
We can. Our neighbors will say we're really gonna make it lighter. For sure.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you have any other questions?
Sure.
No, I don't have any more.
Thank you.
I have maybe three things now. I had two to start with.
Okay.
First of all, as you say, this applies to Old Cura Beach and many different situations that may come up in the future. I just questioning the commission, why would we want to say 24 inches? Or why wouldn't we leave it up to the discretion of the construction? Because maybe you're going to have a construction that's going to take 36 inches rather than 24. And you know what? That doesn't matter either if 24 doesn't matter. So do we want to put that restriction in the ordinance to limit the...
If you don't, then the potential exists for the take up the whole setback.
That's correct.
And I would assume staff would have some issues with that.
Well, maybe
setbacks
not.
Setbacks are there for first responders, air, light, aesthetic values.
Correct, but the situation we're talking about is undeveloped area where that access would still be maintained.
To be devil's advocate, why do we want to mess with the setback? There's the reason for setbacks. Not that I disagree, but...
Well, we've certainly had a lot of discussions about setbacks.
Yeah, we have.
And they tend to focus on safety issues, you know, being able to access. And I do notice that the fire chief has said that he doesn't have any problem with this.
There seems to be a consensus among staff that this is an acceptable proposal. You're still left with two issues. One, it's applicable to all districts, and that may be fine. But the other issue is, have you got the proposed text change in front of you?
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to read.
I don't have any problem with the intent of the text amendment. I am concerned about the standard of unusual property circumstances exist where, because that's so subjective. So see if you can follow this along. Residential elevators may extend 24 inches into a 5 foot side setback when, and I would recommend deleting unusual through where and pick it up again where there is open and unbuildable space adjacent to the specific property line in question, period.
I've got a little bit of problem with open and unbuildable. I understand open, but several of your examples are buildable. Okay, you know, I think that, you know, for example, I believe the one that you showed the parking lot for Cura Beach Dunes or Cura Beach Village, I forget what it was, that is a buildable lot. They just have decided not to build it. Some of the other areas may not be buildable, but John, can you help? I mean, when it says open and unbuildable, how would you view that type of definition? Or is there another definition that truly would define unbuildable that... Yeah.
I would encourage you guys maybe just move this text amendment to next month's agenda and let's all think about that.
And I would also, I mean, the fire chief said he didn't have any problems with this, but I know how, I mean, I'm sent 100 emails a day for me to respond to, and I tend to click. I just want to make sure that he did understand that this is going into the setback.
It's the same, some of the same questions that we had over the fence.
Yeah, on the other setback. Yeah.
Right. So I certainly would like to.
And personally, I think anything that blocks egress or ingress to the backyard is a potential safety.
Right. And, of course, that's why they put the adjacent to open and unbuildable, because it wouldn't block it.
But I agree, because I live in the village, and the village, that lot could be sold tomorrow.
Yes, it could.
By a vote.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that was pointed specifically in your situation is that your hallway going down is not an elevator, and yet that also goes into the setback.
Yes.
Okay, so that actually wouldn't be allowed under the way that this is written right now. I'm seeing what I'm saying? Because that's not the elevator. That's actually a hallway. And so that wouldn't be allowed under this particular text amendment. The hallway. The elevator would be, but not the hallway.
And also, Steve, you did a good job. You got the homeowners HOA's approval. I think we should make a statement in here that it's with the approval of the other property owner, because you don't want to encroach on that setback area with another owner not knowing about it. I mean, you got the approval, that's fine. Talk about the next guy. Want to make him get
always for this type of I strike that. I'm thinking of the text amendment itself.
What about the next guy who wants to build it on the side, but there's a place either in the front or the back that would take the elevator?
I wish we had a mechanism. I'm just going to speak right now. I wish we had a mechanism like some cities do. I know in South Carolina, I'm not sure if we can do it in North Carolina, but some cities in South Carolina have a mechanism where they can look at special situations and analyze this, because you wouldn't be here if they hadn't done the survey and found out that your lot line is 2 feet closer than what you thought it was. You know, you thought you would have been building within the existing setbacks or within the existing setback rules. And so the reason you're here is kind of a unique situation, but unfortunately when you do a text amendment, it applies to the whole town of Kiri Beach.
Well, and I don't know how many other people in Kiri Beach this wouldn't affect. You know, if you look at the 40-some pictures, I'm confident that all 40-some pictures probably would not reflect the need for this text amendment. However, I don't know how many others are out there that I didn't take pictures of that may be reflective.
Well, we're an aging community.
With the demographic
this
change,
is going to come up more and more, I would imagine.
With the demographic change in our community, to your point, not only from an age, but a monetary standpoint, and what homes are worth now, and as you know, in 2000, for those of you that were here in 2000 and before, it was rare we had an elevator. Well, it's shortly after that they started putting elevators in homes. And today it's almost a standard in three-story homes here in the Kiri Beach, from what I'm seeing. And so there must be a way of accommodating this community of this need.
So the purpose is, you know, a few years down the road is going to be a struggle to climb the stairs like you did 20 years ago.
No, it's already today. My wife is cancer, and I just the other day when I came to St. John, I had a knee brace on. So this isn't, and I have my follow-up next week with my cardio, with my knee guy.
And then put two bags of groceries, too.
Just kind of a whim. This is a necessary. And you look at me as like, I look around, most people are kind of aging, okay?
We all do.
You know, if they're not, probably a problem, right? So as they age, the needs, 20 years ago when I built this house, I never thought we'd be having this conversation.
John, and I'm not exactly sure on this, is there any ADA exceptions for elevators in existing structures?
We have them for ramps, but they're temporary.
He's talking about just the general ADA guidelines.
Yeah, ADA guidelines for.
I don't think any of that applies to single-family residential structures.
have to look, but I can't remember.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Based on the old survey, are you saying that if you built the elevator, there wouldn't be any encroachment?
Well, the fact of the matter is there was never an old survey.
Well, based on the misunderstanding about the property.
Well, the item that I'm referring to that was in the town file shows, this is our home, and it shows 9 feet.
You can charge here. For a lot of grass.
Okay, this was in the
what's the setback, a 5 foot setback?
Yes, sir.
So 24 inches would not go into the setback based on
well, it's 4 feet setback.
Well, see, the 9 foot, if it truly was 9 feet, as your plot plan says, I'd have the 5 feet setback, right. And I'd put my 4 foot elevator in, I wouldn't even talk to y'all.
Right.
And that was the whole
thing. And how much, based on the survey, did 9 change to what?
Well, as John and I looked at it, the house is angled here at 7 point something inches. Back here is almost 9 feet. So they angled the house, of which no one knew, I didn't know. And because for whatever reason, we weren't supplied a survey, and apparently the lender didn't require a survey back then. Or I'd had one. So when Joe Vern laid the house out, he angled it just a tad, and for whatever reason, but still even this is landscaped, and the reason we landscaped this back here when we built the house was because that corner of the club fence has been there for 20-some years. So we closed it in and took the landscaping all the way down to follow with that.
Kerry Dunes, I guess.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That drawing that you got, that you just showed me, where did that come from?
Beth gave it to me out of the file here at the town hall.
I mean, was it something that was supplied to you all as the owners way back when?
No, sir. I don't remember that being the case. All I remember knowing is this. He said, yeah, this is from here. This is the line right here, and in fact, it isn't.
That was just a plot plan the builder provided in order to get his building permit.
I was thinking of hardship.
Can you explain the hardship? Because that's what I was referring to. In South Carolina, there's a little more flexibility on hardship.
No, I'm just... was wondering whether a variance would be an approach, but I'm not sure. If he'd been supplied with a survey way back when that showed 9, yeah, I think that rises to a hardship, but I'm not sure he's got that.
That would be a variance to the, right. Rather than changing the whole text amendment, right. That'd be a variance.
I think I'd rather see a variance.
I don't know that...
At least it wouldn't change the overall language.
I'm not sure there's enough of a hardship with a... I mean, all there is that shows the 9 feet is a plot plan developed by the builder and given to John's department. I'm not sure it's a hardship that this gentleman relied upon.
So you need an extra 2 feet, basically, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
And there's also absolutely nowhere else on the structure you can put it.
We had him turn it upside down.
Yeah, no, I understand.
When we built it, we lined those staircases up for it. So when we built it, not anticipating this to be an issue. So when we built it, we thought we had our ducks covered, and
John's suggestion about tweaking it is a good one, and part of that tweak could limit the application of this amendment to whatever district you felt was appropriate. In other words, it doesn't have to be all districts. You can limit it to residential district or a residential district. For we're going to tweak it, that's one of the tweaks. That's
and have a better definition of open and unbuildable, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think we ought to look at this, you know, think about it, because I do struggle with the idea of allowing things in the setbacks just out of principle. But I understand the hardship issue, and I understand the aging issue. You know, I think when anybody builds a property or buys a property in Kiri Beach, we ought to give them the notice saying, you will get older, and think about it. I know when I built my house back in 2004, we thought about that. And so we built the house. Now, well, I'm not up on stilts, but we built it where the bedroom and everything's on the first floor, knowing that as we age, it's going to be hard to get to the second and third floor in there. So we can live on the first floor, you know, so that is a consideration.
Well, as I mentioned, that's why we lined the staircases up to accommodate this. So it wasn't a lack of planning.
Right.
And saying, well, Steve, you'll never get old. It wasn't that at all. The fact is we had different information than what we thought we had.
If I could ask the attorney real quick, what would be the implications of us allowing a variance under a hardship rule with what's been told to us? Would that kind of set a precedent or be, I mean, what were the implications?
You don't have the authority to grant a variance.
We don't, okay.
That's a quasi-judicial in front of the BOA where four things have to be proven, one of them being the hardship resulting from the land. But it's a BOA.
It's a BOA thing, okay.
But that also doesn't that have something to do with affecting other people's value of their property? And
I think the four things are. I think the four things are you need a variance from the application of a specific provision because of four things. One, unique hardship emanating from the land itself, that the hardship was not the result of your actions, that the spirit of the ordinance is maintained despite the variance. There's one other one that's kind of similar, but it would be up to the opponents to come in and present evidence of diminution of property values, traffic impacts, stuff like that.
I guess in this particular case, since we already have a letter from the homeowners, that wouldn't be a problem.
It's a whole different ballgame when you need to get variance. You come in front of a different body, you present evidence to show you that you've got those four things, it's not, and you have a supermajority vote has to approve it. It's not the easiest thing. And I'm not sure you've got the hardship that the law contemplates.
Is it out of the question for you to ask the HOA to deed you a high slice of that, that would give you the...
That's a real interesting question, because if he's maintained that strip for 20 years, that's adverse possession, and technically, under that legal doctrine, he owns that strip. But I'm not sure you want to go there.
Well, adverse possession is a bit tricky.
Yeah,
I understand.
Well, you could offer to buy it. You don't have to adverse possess it.
But as I look at
he's maintained control of that strip for 20 years.
That's a little open space. It's lovely. It's green. It's, you know, looks nice. Feeding you, and it doesn't, I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, couple hundred square feet of property.
That's a very interesting concept, because I just settled this dispute between a POA and a property owner that was encroaching into the POA's common area, and the deal we worked out was the POA deeded that part of the common area to that party, and that resolved the issue. So that is a very interesting concept, particularly if you've been maintained at all. I mean, when I say adverse possession, it's an interesting concept. I think it has some application, but I wouldn't recommend trying it. I'm not sure how your neighbors would feel about you going about saying it's mine because of adverse possession. But if everybody's on board with what you want to do, I think kind of Valley is suggesting it's an interesting one to explore. But again, that may be one thing you want to explore while we explore how to tweak it. I don't think there's, I I'm not sure there's any real opposition to what you're trying to do. I don't know. It's not my turf. But I am optimistic that whatever way anybody wants to go, we can come up with the language.
Thank you. We actually, in talking with our HOA, I spoke with the board. They said, the president said, that's no problem. I mean, it's not going to affect anybody. And I said, well, I'll buy it. Whatever you want to do, you figure out how much it's worth and tell me and we'll work something out. And he said, oh, we'll work that out. We'll work that out. Well, I went and told Jim. I said, Jim, I don't think it's that easy. I said, they don't own that property. The HOA owns the property, of which there's 135 people that own that property. So then, and you have to have a majority or supermajority.
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds to vote for it.
Which, yeah, to sell that piece. To sell that slither and land.
20% of, you know, but I could get the vote. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah, that's a good point about the consensus.
So that's why, ultimately, and that's a great suggestion, it's one that Jim and I thought we had it all worked out. I mean, and one that have to go through this at your time.
But you looked at the declaration of covenants, and that's what it requires for the HOA.
Yes, sir.
In full disclosure, I'm on the board for the HOA in Curry. So, yeah, that is true. We don't have the authority to sell any of our assets without going to the property owners and get a supermajority to approve it. So we need like two.
I'm familiar with a provision like that.
We just don't have the authority.
What proxies do you have?
How many what?
How many proxies do you have?
Well, we could do it by proxy. We've done that before with our annual meeting. We could do a...
You're only looking at a 2-foot strip there.
I mean, I think, when I think about it, I mean, I see where you have an issue where, I think if it says unused, open, and it needs the approval of whoever owns the property that, you know, you're talking about, I bet in a lot of the instances when I look at those open spaces where you're kind of impeding on, they're owned by the town. The town would have to approve it. Because a lot of them I see them were like by parking lots, walkways. I mean, there's a house right beside me, and there's a walkway, and if she wanted to build an elevator, she'd have to go through the same kind of process, and she'd have to come to the town, because I think that's yours. Mm-hmm. So I bet the majority of those open spaces are owned by the town.
Well, I propose we think about this, and, you know, you might want to explore the possibility of purchasing. I was reading about the adverse possession. Actually, they had a thing called color of title, which I never heard of before, but a color of title means that if you have a document where you thought you actually owned it, it reduces it to 7 years of maintenance.
I never could quite understand what that meant. I was reading it and it was like...
Yeah, so, and the fact that you have a document that, you know, that shows 9 feet, I mean, might be a color of title. Although you've been there for 20 years, you know, maintaining it anyway, so. But again, that might, you know, calling it adverse possession might get your neighbors pretty pissed off, too.
Yeah, I'm not looking to anger my neighbors over this. This is all about helping the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I'd have to say adverse possession, despite beneficial aspects, does have a negative connotation.
That's not what we're looking for.
No, I agree.
And that's certainly not the way we do business. So,
I think your best avenue is to let staff and me try to tweak the language and get it to where it works everywhere.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your consideration.
The commission agrees with that approach.
Thank you.
I think that's our part too, right? Want to look at the language, come back?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, I mean, particularly language related to unbuildable right next door. That, you know, my general feeling is, I mean, I struggle with allowing anything that into a setback just because of safety reasons. But if truly there's access and the safety issues taken care of by a real strong definition of unbuildable that will remain open as long as, you know, in perpetuity, you know, then I might lean in that direction. I don't know how you feel on that, but that would maybe be my general feeling.
Great. And also, when you do look at the verbiage, remember that hallway, like we said, if you're going to have a covered hallway going down to it, that is not an elevator.
Right.
And that makes a big difference. Other than redoing the whole downstairs, which is, if that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do.
I'm certainly inclined to think elevator, but not hallways, because that's a, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's a different issue than what you're trying to get at with the elevator.
But there are already other exceptions. You can have ground level walkways, so you could, you know, make it a open walkway
entrance
to the elevator with a door.
Right.
Just a suggestion.
Yeah.
You
know. Sure. Okay.
Okay.
So
does
that mean we'll see each other next month?
Yes.
So that means we'll put that on the agenda next month, Beth, and we'll come back again?
Okay. Yep. Well, thank you all for your consideration here, all your time.
Thank you.
Now, Jim, do we need to go to the consistency statements, or that'll happen next
month?
Next month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, sir.
All right, that brings us to, that's it for the agenda. Does anyone else have anything to bring up before we adjourn?
Yeah, I just want to mention, as I kind of hinted before, that the last 2 weeks I was out in California and went up and down coastal beach communities. I went to Encinitas, Solana Beach, La Jolla, Del Mar, Laguna Beach, and Dana Point, you know, and did a lot of kind of research in terms of what they're doing in terms of their planning and zoning and architectural type of issues, talked with several of the planning folks in these different communities, and you know, I think we're doing a great job. And if there's anything that I heard is that the increasing property prices, the increasing population pressures make it even more important to have strict rules in terms of managing these type of issues
mm-hmm.
and anticipating issues before they start to rise. I mean, we don't have really the major problem that they have out there, but they have some serious problems in terms of homelessness and that sort of thing that we don't have here. And that's one of the things that every single one of them mentioned is that is one of the major problems. But anyway, but in terms of what we're doing, I think we're right on target. You know, I think, I mean, those are beautiful areas, but so is Kiri Beach.
Thank you, Craig. Anyone for adjournment?
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.